Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts, I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 91, Revenge of Pax Pox.
Okay, well, that was a lot. So, as you might have surmised from the title, we're going to be talking about PAX West in the bottom half of the show. So, but to get started, hey Mike, guess what we're talking about again?
I have no idea what we're talking about again. He lied looking at the show notes.
He lied knowing that he wrote the show notes. We're talking about
executive compensation yet again.
Yeah, and we talked about this last week with regard to the delay in the Activision say-on-pay vote, which actually did take place this week.
Yeah, it sure did. So Activision shareholders have decided that Bobby Kotick's compensation package is okay. They approved it by the narrowest of margins. Because only 54% of shareholders voted yes on say on pay, which is a hint that Activision has a lot of work to do and could almost certainly face down a no vote next year.
Yeah, CTW is not going to give up, especially because they've had some successes, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Absolutely.
So as a result, Kotick will earn $155 million in total as total compensation package as a result of the approval. And his reduced compensation, remember that they knocked down his base compensation and his bonus compensation by 50%?
I do remember.
Because this is just an extension to his contract that will last a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
This could all revert anyway in, you know, by 2023.
Yep.
So this is a very short-term, we'll call it a fix.
It's but not, it is a, not a fix. $155 million in total compensation is ridiculous, quite frankly, considering that Kotick doesn't even like games.
So one of the interesting things that popped out about this, because every year before the annual meeting, companies are required to file an annual report and lay out what shareholders are voting on. And one of the things that's in that, of course, is the compensation. So they know why they're voting on say on pay, what they're voting on.
Sure.
So one of the things that is in there is the entirety of the compensation package, including different alternatives to a person's dismissal. So it could be like, oh, if they die, here's what happens. If they get fired for cause, here's what happens. If they get terminated for no reason, or they leave with good cause. Remember, that came up with regard to GameStop and the CEO, Jim Bell. Mm-hmm. Jim Bell was the CFO, and George Sherman was the CEO.
Correct.
Both of them were allowed to leave with good reason.
Yes,
so they got
exactly
their full compensation package. And then for Activision, there's another tier of that, which is if they let him go because Activision has been acquired by another controlling entity, he gets even more.
He does. So it puts Activision in a bit of a sticky situation.
It really does.
Because, so if Activision were to get rid of Kotick for any reason other than, quote, good reason, or if Kotick were to leave with good reason, it would cost the company $265 million for one person.
For one person.
One person.
So here's the way this works, all right? Actually, here's the one question that I have and that just popped up and something I'll try to find the answer to. If his contract isn't renewed, is that him being terminated?
That I don't know, because as you and I well know, you can work without a contract for any given amount of time.
Sure. So it'll be interesting. I'm gonna poke at that one. So here's the way that $265 million breaks down. If he leaves with good reason, in other words, they want to lower his salary and it's not acceptable, or they force him to relocate or something like that, or if they terminate him just because they want to and not because he's done anything wrong, he would immediately get $2.9 million in salary.
Yeah.
All right, so that's cash.
Yep.
He would get a bonus-based severance. So this is his actual, like, hey, this is what we're paying you to leave. $12.6
million. $12.6
million.
But you know what I got for my severance package when I got let go?
A kick in the ass?
No, I got, I think, a month's salary, but I made $12 an hour.
Yeah, okay, so that's nothing. All right. Benefits continuation. So he gets to keep his benefits for, I think it's something like 18 months. $265,000, that's worth.
Wow.
Equity in the amount of $249 million.
That's the biggie.
If he were to die, he would get $252 million, not the $265. Or I guess his estate would, right?
His estate would, yeah.
Right, if he becomes disabled, he would get $253 million. So just a little more than if he dies.
Wow.
If he gets fired for cause, as we said, if he gets fired for cause. So if this is, if he does something wrong and the board is like, screw you, you're violated out. Something, you're out, we're firing you, and here's why we're firing you, he only gets $265,000.
Doesn't get any of the equity.
But only gets $265,000. Can you imagine screwing up so badly that all you get is $265,000?
No, I can't, because even money in that amount is funny money.
Yeah.
To us.
Now, that $265 million number, that if he gets fired for, you know, for no reason, or if he leaves for a good cause, if Activision is acquired and then he leaves because they want to replace him or whatever, I think that number was $297 million. So he gets nearly $300 million if Activision is acquired and then they're like, Bobby Kotick, go away.
If only people could see the look on my face right now. So here, I think my jaw just hit the floor.
Part of that is he has now built himself an insurance to the tune of $300 million that if the company were to ever get acquired, his job would be secure, or he gets $300 million almost.
Unbelievable. That honestly, if it were me and I were helping with the due diligence for that particular acquisition, mm-hmm. that would be a no-go.
Well, that part of that, I mean...
That would be a no-go.
No way. Activision, after prying themselves away from Vivendi, I'm pretty sure they don't want to be acquired. It will never want to be acquired.
And I absolutely agree with you on that one. But it's just, I am flabbergasted. Like 100% flabbergasted. That number for one person.
For one person.
Not for a company. Not for a team. Not for a studio. For a single person who is not involved in making the games.
Absolutely. Now,
I'm...
Oh, that exists in a vacuum right now. So let's talk a little bit about executive compensation and the way it's figured. They look at what's called a peer group.
Right.
So that peer group includes other game publishers, but it includes other tech companies and software makers and things like that. In fact, they list their whole peer group. If it's not in the Activision one, it's in the EA annual statement.
Yeah, EA is usually really good about their transparency. Right.
Now,
Activision, not so much.
We're going to talk about EA because I think it's important. Now, I want you to keep that $265 million number in your head.
Yeah, it's hard for that to go away.
Yeah, it's burned into your brain. It is bad. It is a bad. Huge, huge number, and it's ridiculous. Now, EA, I would say EA is Activision's most comparable competitor.
I would agree.
They exist, first of all, they're both American companies that operate globally.
Yes.
They both have massive franchises.
Yep.
They have multiple business units underneath them, right? Certainly. They've got strong mobile offerings at this point.
Yep.
They're not identical.
No.
But if you had to say, like, who is Activision's biggest competitor, I would say EA. Who is EA's biggest competitor, I would say Activision.
Agreed.
Now, that's not to say they're their only competitors, but they're biggest. And, sure. And this is important table setting for what we're about to talk about.
Indeed.
Now, one of the things we did note, there was an issue that was brought up about diversity. Was it last year we were talking about this, or a number of months ago? And Activision balked at it, and EA was like, "No."
It was earlier
this year, and EA said, "You know what? We're gonna take this feedback, and we're gonna make sure that there is diversity." It was the request for making sure that there is diverse applicants that are put in front of the
Absolutely.
Company.
Absolutely. Yeah, right? That was this year. Absolutely.
Activision threw a little temper tantrum. EA said, "You know what? This is great. We're gonna
implement this. Feedback.
Yep, and we're gonna implement this."
But again, this is an enormous cultural difference because, as we know, EA is one of the best in class when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. For the game industry, they were leading the charge in AAA publishing for the culture long before any other AAA publishers really Absolutely. Sat up and took notice. EA cared in that particular way.
And quite frankly, what was interesting was, do you remember when EA was voted the worst company? It was the negative popularity contest, the worst company in the world.
Sure.
they were doing all this at the same time. So there is this gap between what consumers value and what the industry and the people who exist in this industry and recruiting and maintain and retaining good talent, right?
Absolutely.
So,
and that's okay. I mean, there always will be between consumers and the companies that they purchase from. It's not a big deal. It is what it is.
Right. But my point is that this is the stuff that matters. The way you show up in the, you know, in terms of DEI, in terms of the way you treat your company. And we talked about this in 2019 when the layoffs happened and how Activision was cold and
heartless
about it, and Andrew Wilson, you know, personally put out a statement, owned it. Yep. So all of this is to kind of to lead the way into the conversation about EA's compensation. Mm-hmm. And they also, CTW took aim at EA last year, and they were successful. In terms of swaying shareholder opinion at EA.
That's right. So EA's say on pay vote failed last year because only 26% of shareholders voted yes. So the company was forced to make some big changes. One of CTW's biggest complaints was the too frequent special equity awards. So none were awarded in fiscal 2021.
Additionally, executives can now earn stock awards on a 3-year cycle instead of an annual cycle.
That's fantastic.
And there are additional, there are two new additional performance metrics as part of the process for earning them. So they are leaning more heavily on returning value to shareholders as part of the compensation.
Absolutely. And CEO Andrew Wilson's annual equity award for this fiscal year and beyond is now required to be 60% performance based.
Now, Wilson will likely get a raise this year of 83%.
Ooh.
It's a lot, from $21.4 million to $39.2 million. That's total compensation.
Okay.
And this is in large part due to a performance-based stock award that was made by the board before the annual statement came out last year, before the say on pay vote happened. And it was a retention measure. Apparently Andrew Wilson is constantly being recruited. People want to hire him away.
I wonder why.
Now, remember when Patrick Soderlund left EA?
I remember a lot of that. We reported on that over at Game Daily, I believe.
Yes. So Patrick Soderlund, when he left, there was a lot of misreporting about this because it's very complicated. When you get a retention bonus, it's not like, hey, we're dropping $10 million into your account or $5 million or $1 million. Nope. We're not dropping money in your account. You get what's called PRSUs or RSUs. They are timed, vested stock awards. They're equity awards. So what happens
is they're
restricted. So they only vest after a certain amount of time. So because they're retention. So the idea is we want you to stay on long term. You don't vest those RSUs, those reserved stock units or restricted stock units rather, or your PRSUs, which are your performance restricted stock units.
Yes.
And then EA has something called PIRSUs, which were our performance incremental restricted stock units. And I tried to find, I actually had a hard time finding, common term.
I've never heard that term.
I had a very, very difficult time finding out what the I stood for, because I don't think that anybody really uses that. It's just an internal designation between how they're awarded and how they vest. Regardless. So when you get a retention bonus, let's say we're going to say, hey, Amanda, we don't want you to leave. We are going to give you a $30 million restricted stock unit retention bonus.
When do those stocks vest?
So they're going to vest. You're going to probably get a third after a year, another third after the second year, and another third after the third year.
Absolutely.
And it's to keep you on. And if you leave, you don't forfeit.
Get that.
And that's what happened with Patrick Soderlund. So people are like, oh, he just got this huge retention bonus and then he left. It's like, well, okay, he didn't.
Yeah, because you don't get to vest those. You abandon them, essentially, and they get put back into the company.
Because it's a retention bonus. And the idea is we want you to stay. We like what you're doing. We think you're good for the company. We don't want to lose you. We certainly don't want to lose you to a competitor.
Certainly.
So stay. And if you stay, it's golden handcuffs, right?
Yes. Yes. And that is something that is fairly common for executives and for people that are higher up.
Absolutely.
In companies.
So additionally, so his total compensation, in large part due to this, the weird timing of this retention bonus that happened, that's going up this year. Now,
it's
other
still,
executives.
But it's okay. Can we tie this back to Activision real quick?
We're gonna. I mean, we can, but yes, do it.
$155 million.
Yes.
For Kotick.
Yes.
Who doesn't play games.
Yes.
Who's never made a game.
Yes.
Who doesn't care about games.
Yes.
Okay.
Andrew
looking
Wilson,
at Andrew Wilson,
who came up through games.
Who is a developer.
Yep.
At his core.
Who's a player.
Who's a player.
He knows his games.
is going to be making $39.2 million.
So bottom line, Bobby Kotick, 155. Bottom line, Andrew Wilson, 39.2.
The disparity on that's absolutely bonkers.
And Activision's like, yeah, this is fine. No. Activision shareholders are like, this is fine. And EA shareholders were like, hey, this maybe is this is... And quite frankly, I'm not saying that EA shareholders are wrong.
No, they're not wrong.
Because I think executive compensation, as we talk about it,
is inflated.
Yeah, it's inflated, it's absurd, and it keeps getting worse.
It does. And where we end up... And that level of disparity, mm-hmm. and the fact that Activision shareholders said... yes, that this is fine, is completely bananas to me, and also speaks to what Activision's shareholders care about.
Yeah.
Versus what EA's shareholders care about, right? And quite frankly, I look at the disparity in the compensation packages, and honestly, both of them make an absolute butt ton of money.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
I mean, Andrew Wilson is fine. Like... I'm not crying over Andrew Wilson only making $40 million this year.
No, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And that's a ridiculous amount of money to earn.
Yes.
Period. For one person, that's ridiculous.
Yep.
And at the same time, Andrew Wilson is still, at his core, a developer
mm-hmm.
and a gamer.
Yes.
Whereas Kotick only looks at games as products.
Yeah. So, the rest of the C-suite over at EA is actually, for the most part, going to see some drops, again, in response to the say on pay. So, there's something in, when you look at those annual statements, they have NEOs,
right?
Named executive officers. Those are people who are of such high stature in the company, where they are specifically identified in the annual statement, and their compensation package is something that's specifically laid out for everyone to see.
Right.
So, the rest of those NEOs, right? Are going to see a drop with the exception of one. So Blake Jorgensen, who is currently the chief operating officer and the chief financial officer, is going to drop 39% to $11.8 million. Chief studios officer Laura Mealy also is going to be down 30% to $11.2 million. Ken Moss, who's the chief technology officer, down 32% to $9.7 million. The only increase in the rest of the C-suite is that Chief Marketing Officer Chris Bruzzo is going up 34%, but that actually brings him in line with Ken Moss at $9.7 million. So I think that was probably an adjustment measure, like, hey, he's in the C-suite, he's making significantly less than everybody else. Marketing's kind of important to EA, maybe we should be bringing him up. So it looks like they have really tried to bring all of the C-suite. I can understand Blake doing two jobs, making a little bit more. I can understand Laura, who is responsible for
all the studios.
Increasing numbers. Remember, we're going to be talking about an acquisition.
Yes, absolutely.
At the top of Investment Interlude, actually. But the other thing that stood out to me, we talked about kind of base compensation, right, and the difference between Bobby Kotick and Andrew Wilson. Let's look at the rest of those termination scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Andrew Wilson. Now, it's not laid out quite in the same way. Like, we don't have a in case of acquisition.
No.
For Andrew Wilson. So let's talk about, again, that $265 million number, right?
Yep. So the best case, quote, termination scenario for Wilson is $57.5 million, including cash, restricted stock units, performance restricted stock units, both regular and incremental flavors, and continuing benefits. Now, let's compare that to Kotick. Kotick would make $265 million or $297 million, depending on how that scenario would play out. Like, for one person. One person.
I mean, look, if someone said to me, Mike, your golden parachute is $57 million. Okay, sure, kick me out of the plane.
Yeah, let's go.
Kick me out of the plane. I will...
I'm going to go start a new studio. Peace.
Yeah, peace. I'm going to go do something else with my life. I'm going to buy an island.
Okay, I don't want to buy islands. Because that's imperialism.
I will buy an uninhabited island. There we go.
So Bobby Kotick, we're going north?
I don't know. Like, I don't know where we're going.
I don't know what you're... It's going to be a frozen island in the middle of the Arctic.
I haven't thought this
through. I
have not thought this through.
Clearly not.
Let me have my brain island.
Your brain... Yeah, you know what? You can invest in your brain island. I love this for you.
Welcome to Brain Island.
I don't even want to know what that reality show would look like. It's just, that's upsetting.
It's just Samus Aran shooting me in the head over and over again.
Okay. Clearly Mike's been playing Metroid.
I haven't been. Who wouldn't, really? So, again, we look at this huge disparity. I have no idea what Activision is thinking right now. In fact, I'm gonna just maybe I'm wrong. Let's just go look at something real quick.
What are you gonna look up?
I'm gonna look up market capitalization. I'm just curious.
Are we gonna compare market caps?
So EA's market cap right now is $39.66 billion.
$39.66 billion in market capitalization for Electronic Arts. Okay.
Activision's is 71.69. So it's double that. But the market cap is only double.
Is only double.
Uh-huh. But Bobby Kotick
makes
four times as much. Wait, four? Four times as much.
Uh-huh.
And if he gets canned, it's more than five times as much.
Okay.
There's something wrong here.
Gosh, are there ever so many things wrong at Activision? So many things.
I don't know. Maybe
like
maybe,
saying the soft part loud.
Maybe they should hire some more Republicans to figure it out.
Yeah, that sounds.
And I'm not again being very clear. Some more Trumpers. Yeah. Let's just do that. They'll figure it out. I'm sure. They're the best people.
Yeah.
Truly
the hugest.
I'm salty.
Okay, but you know what's not salty, Michael?
My grandmother's cooking because she doesn't use salt.
Okay. I mean, I've never met your grandmother, so I wouldn't know. But I think it's time for investment interlude.
Okay.
So EA, speaking of EA.
Yeah. See, I lined it up.
Yeah, no, I see what you did there. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good. I like it. So EA has announced the purchase of Playdemic, makers of Golf Clash, for $1.4 billion in cash.
So many bells.
So many bells for Tom Nook. All right. Not only does this further shore up?
Yes.
Weird. Okay. I clearly did not read this language in its
depth. This just shores it up. Makes it surer.
Okay. So
The merger.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So this is great for EA's mobile offerings, but it is the first divestment by Warner Brothers.
Yes.
So the rest of Warner Media's assets are going to be part of the new merged entity with Discover, though we're still watching.
Discovery. No, it's my fault. It's like Discovery, Warner Media, Discovery. Discover this show note, Michael. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, we do things. We had a long week.
Oh, gosh.
And we're going to have another long week next week. So anyway. So yes, it is going to be part of the new merged entity with Discovery, though we are watching closely as we anticipate there will be further divestments and streamlining.
Yeah, so remember when we first reported on the WarnerMedia divestment, the merger, and we said that some of the assets were staying with AT&T?
Yes. I
don't know if this was it, but now everything else, like they've confirmed that everything else is going over to Discovery Warner.
So it was
Warner.
Just Playdemic.
Maybe. I mean, at the time, who knows? Like, something could have changed. They might have renegotiated. Who knows? But I would not be surprised. And I'm very curious to see if the new entity, which is like Discovery Warner Media, I don't know what their name is. Their name is silly. It's not catchy.
Company corporate title name here.
That one. Whatever it's called.
Mashup of words.
Yes, mashup of words. I would be shocked if they held on to everything.
And I would also be shocked if
they're either going to shutter stuff or they're going to sell it off, and it would make more sense to sell it off.
It would absolutely make more sense to sell it off. There's great talent at a lot of those studios, if not all of those studios, mm-hmm. and it would be a shame to let them just founder.
Yes. All right. Habbo owner Azerion, we talked about them recently.
We did.
They've purchased Germany-based WOW. That's capital WHOW. WOW. WOW Games, which publishes and develops free-to-play social games. We previously reported in April about Azerion raising $242 million for acquisitions. No terms of the deal to purchase WOW were disclosed.
Wowzers! Okay, Tencent has upped its minority investment in Jaeger. Tencent now holds a majority stake in the Berlin-based studio, most recently known for The Cycle, but also known for Dreadnought and Spec Ops The Line.
Play Spec Ops The Line.
Okay, I don't have time.
Play Spec Ops The Line, man.
Why are you the way you are?
I was born this way.
Okay, but let me finish
and
what...
And then dropped on my head.
Okay, that's nice. That's nice for you. Okay, moving on. The percentage of ownership was not disclosed in the interview conducted by German publication Games Wirtschaft. in which the news first emerged.
Is Wirtschaft just Workshop? Is this just Games Workshop?
Games Wirtschaft?
Is Jaeger now Warhammer?
Okay, cool. Yes. In fact, Dreadnought. Yes. Dreadnought.
There you go. Confirmed. Did it. Boom. That's this episode done. Gamers Class, a company that helps players improve their skills through online classes and coaching, has announced a seed funding round worth $2.5 million. The round was led by VC firm ByFounders, with participation from Ben Holmes, formerly of GP Index Ventures, Morten Wolf, founder of Game Analytics, and returning investors Bumble Ventures and True Sight Ventures. Gamers Class has now raised a total of $4.2 million, and the company says it has 250,000 customers in 180 countries, and funding will be used to expand its masterclass program and build out tutorials, how-to guides, and educational videos. It is essentially an online course to get good.
Perhaps I should enroll for Apex Legends.
I was a truly painful experience. I would flunk out of any class trying, how do I gun? How do I gun?
I did damage yesterday, at least.
I did damage to my self-esteem playing that game.
That game's so hard. All right, anyway, and I'm a good gamer, and Apex Legends has got a really steep learning curve. Anyway. Also in esports, Rivalry, a Toronto-based esports betting operator, has raised $22 million. The round was led by 8 Capital and Cormark Securities, with a variety of other funders participating, including Canaccord Genuity and M Partners. The funding, which brings the total... You are in rare form today. Which brings the total raise to $44 million for the past year, and this will be used to grow the company through new hires, new territories, and more.
All right, here's a weird one. Like, this one was interesting to me, because I want to just chat about this model.
Okay.
All right, GXC has raised $4.73 million in its Series A round, which will help grow its G-Round crowdsourced testing platform. You heard that right, a crowdsourced testing platform. Essentially, community members sign up to test unreleased games and earn G points for participating. These can be used on in-game rewards and G-Round merch. GXC also runs a gaming accelerator called Global Top Round. The Series A round was led by Konai Partners, Hana Financial, SangSang Ventures, and Enlight Ventures. GXC says its current valuation is about $36 million.
Okay.
Why would you...
Okay. This is further proof that quality assurance continues to be so very undervalued in this industry. Just hire QA testers. Just hire QA testers. Hire a QA lead. Hire QA analysts. Build out a QA department.
Like, I think it's fine if you're doing late stage betas and you're doing a bug bounty thing.
I guess, but even then, pay qualified people.
And you're paying them in scrip, essentially.
Like, that sucks. Everything about this business model sucks.
I mean, I would love to know, and I looked up, like, I did a lot of research. Like, I found the story, and I went to their website, and I looked up everything, like, everything that I could on their website. And it doesn't make it clear to me, if I wanted to engage them, it's like, okay, do you, like, at what stage are you bringing in community? You're bringing in the community. Like, what are your NDA processes like, and how do you enforce those, and...
Like, this just seems like a bad idea, no matter how you slice it. Why would developers ever use a service like this when they have their own built-in communities that if they really wanted to do a bug hunt, they could just send their Discord community after it and just give them some beta keys.
So I guess my question is, if you're listening to the show and you've worked with this company and you...
Like,
you
please have a benefit, help us
please,
understand.
Yeah, please reach out and help us understand this.
From our perspective, this business model doesn't make any sense and doesn't seem like it has much value for developers. Or the testers, quite frankly.
Yeah, like, if you're gonna pay me to test, like, pay me. Don't just give me, like... Well, I want G-Round merch. Oh, yes, because, hey, man, I love your G-Round t-shirt. Where'd you get that? Well, I found 7 bugs in this game. And also, this game is this. And I'm not supposed to talk about it, but I'll tell you. It's like, none of this makes sense to me. So listen, either something on their website isn't communicating how this works, and maybe they just pitch developers directly, and that's how they... I don't know.
I don't know either. It just seems like a bad time all around.
Yep.
All right, moving on.
Yep.
Boomslingers developer Boom Corp has announced seed funding in the amount of $1.8 million. Boom was founded by veteran developers who worked on well-known mobile titles, including Angry Birds and Badland. Ooh, I like both of those. Mm-hmm. V Games led the round, which will be used to develop social games similar to Boom Slingers.
And one of the things that I didn't throw in the note, because I wanted to mention it, when I was reading, and this was an exclusive on GameSpeed, I believe the company right now is something like 8 people, and they're all women.
Oh, so I love that. So it's
founded by women, run by women. So that's awesome.
That's super cool. Love that.
Yep. VRChat has closed an $80 million Series D round led by Anthos Capital, with participation from Makers Fund, GFR Fund, and others. The investment will be used to iterate and grow the VRChat platform as it pursues its goal of a, quote, virtual universe. So I went and I looked up, I've actually heard of VRChat. I believe it's on Oculus.
It's on Oculus, yeah.
And
what's the deal?
You can create an avatar, and they're like little games that you can do, and you can play board games. It is like the most rudimentary version of the Oasis from Ready Player
One.
That's
cute.
It is adorable, but I wonder if there's a seedy underbelly. Like, in my head, I'm like,
too good to be true.
These avatars are doing nasty stuff, probably. Like,
there's stuff. Now I want to boot up my Oculus and, like,
do you
check it out?
Do you really?
No.
Do you?
Kind of. And now it's time for a break.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
It's time for Quick Hits!
I love that I never have to say that we're back from the break now. I just have to, like, do my jazz hands.
Nobody can see them yet.
No, but I do soon. Them anyway.
Soon.
We have to get our setup all...
Set up.
Damn it. I'm tired.
I am too.
Oh, everything's a lot.
No.
Okay, anyway. So, quick hits time. Two Pokemon fans have found themselves in hot water by leaking Pokemon details while working for a company contracted to print strategy guides for Sword and Shield. The defendants took photos of the guide, posted them on Discord, and then were picked up for wide distribution online. This led to the hashtag GameFreakLied and controversy that plagued Sword and Shield's launch. The Pokemon company has settled, and each defendant will have to pay $150,000 in damages and attorney fees. Don't mess with Pokemon, Nintendo, or Disney. Don't do it.
These two idiots, their starter is Sobble right now.
Yes, seriously. And you know what? It'll forever be Sobble.
It's
because
true.
You know what?
Don't play stupid games. You will win stupid prizes.
Just don't play stupid games. You'll win stupid prizes. That has been like my motto all week, even with each other, and quite frankly, with our children.
Yeah. Speaking of Pokemon, Pokemon Unite was just announced from Tencent's Timmy Studio. It's a MOBA that's going to be on mobile and Switch. Looks kind of interesting.
I'll check it out.
So Tencent Timmy Studio, they just opened a new location in Seattle to make multi-platform AAA games. The new studio is led by two industry veterans. Scott Warner worked on an unannounced title during his two-year tenure at Ubisoft, and he was the game director on Battlefield Hardline. That was the Copaganda one. And a design director on Halo 4.
Ooh.
That was the one about shooting aliens.
Yes, I did, in fact, enjoy the Halos.
Yes. Rossi Zagorcheva worked on a number of Battlefield titles as recently as 2018's Battlefield 5 and as far back as 2013's Battlefield 4, which there were actually games in between those two, so it's not like it took them 5 years to make another Battlefield, which I continue to marvel at that series naming convention.
In fact, it's Battlefield V, Michael.
It's not really.
I know it's not.
Zagorcheva was the senior director of product development at EA's DICE studio. So this is interesting. Tencent making some big moves with its Timmy studio.
Yep. And continuing to demonstrate that even though they have very little interest in actively controlling the studios that they have invested in, you know, they're still making moves in Western games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really interesting. Speaking of interesting but also completely disheartening, GameStop has unexpectedly/expectedly profited off of the memification of its share price once again. The company has announced that it has sold 5 million shares of common stock with gross proceeds totaling 1.1 billion bells. It's going to be interesting to see how this intersects with the SEC investigation now that GameStop is actively benefiting from the share price pump.
Yeah, they, you know, when they announced during their last earnings, it's like, oh yeah, we're complying, but we don't think this has anything to do with us. It's going to be really interesting. And your hands are clean as long as you're not actively benefiting from it.
Kind of seems like they're benefiting from it.
Yeah. Again, the SEC might not do anything because this was driven by Reddit, but if there is any whiff that somebody inside GameStop had anything to do with this, then
it's going to be bad. Sanctions for days.
It's true. Oculus has announced that it's planning to test in-game ads in Oculus apps. Now, I don't know if you have ever watched the pilot episode of Max Headroom.
No, but we did talk about this because I remember we were discussing this about heads exploding.
Right. So in the pilot episode of Max Headroom, there are these things called blipverts. And in fact, the whole thing was that Matt Frewer's character, the reporter, he was the reporter, right?
I don't know.
I think so. He was trying to get away with some evidence that the company knew that they were dangerous. And then...
What's a blipvert?
Hold on. I'm getting there. I'm telling the story of Max Headroom. So then he's like trying to get out of this parking garage, and this barrier comes down. Like a security gate, mm-hmm. and he hits it and hurts his head, and it says on it Max Headroom.
Okay.
All right, and then he gets his like personality somehow gets downloaded and it becomes Max Headroom, right?
Okay.
All right. Anyway, so blipverts were these like condensed advertisements that they kind of like very quickly like ran on TV to maximize impact, and they made people's heads explode.
Well, that's gross.
Anyway, so Oculus, in-game ads on the Quest and stuff. People are, of course, not very happy about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of its first test developers has, in fact, backed out. Resolution Games has announced it is pulling out of the pilot program, and its game, Blaston, will not feature in-game ads as previously announced. So they're losing developers on this. Now, here's the thing. I recall when EA started putting ads in like Need for Speed, and people were like, oh, this is terrible, we're gonna revolt. And I'm sitting here thinking how quaint an idea that was. You were upset that they were doing something that didn't cost you money, that brought them money, that monetized the game, and now today we have loot boxes. Maybe we should have been like, cool, put ads in the games.
However, not in VR.
Yeah, VR is different. To me, VR is very different.
It's very different. It is a completely different experiential process because your brain sees it as actual reality.
I'm looking forward to the Room VR 2, sponsored by Fritos.
We have to sit there and eat Fritos.
Have to eat this whole bowl of Fritos to get the key.
What is this, Saw? That's terrible. You know what's not terrible, though?
What?
Our next quick hit.
Oh, okay.
Near Automata, near Replicant. Thought you were going to
say like Doritos or something.
Well, the only Doritos that I like, they don't sell in America.
Which are like, what flavor?
Bold barbecue.
Bold barbecue Doritos.
Bold barbecue Doritos. They only sell them in Canada, which is, listen, I need to go home. Not just for Doritos.
I don't even go here.
Those Doritos don't even go here, man. I'm going to forever love that quip from Dave Oshry.
So good.
It's just perfect. Anyway, on to our next story. Nier Automata and Nier Replicant have reached a combined 7 million units across digital sales and physical shipments. Replicant, which was released in April, has now reached 1 million units digitally sold and physically shipped.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yes, good for Yoko Taro.
That's lovely.
It is
Yoko
good.
Taro is very strange, but...
Mm. Oh, yes. And those games are very strange.
But you know what? It's a lot of respect there.
Yep. Epic Games has announced it has more than 500 million user accounts with 2.7 billion friend connections across Fortnite, Rocket League, and the Epic Games Store. The company has also announced that it has added voice chat and easy anti-cheat as free features for its Epic Online Services suite. You might recall that Epic purchased EAC in 2018.
I do recall that. Oh, goodness. This next story just really grinds my gears. Nintendo has scored a win in court in the class action suit over Joy-Con drift. Due to the end-user licensing agreement that every user is compelled to accept, the judge in the case has accepted the defense's motion for arbitration. The court hearings are suspended pending the outcome of arbitration.
So, the way arbitration works, because I've actually been through this on a family matter.
You have, absolutely. That happened in, what, 2016?
Yeah. So the way it works is you have both parties and you've got a judge, typically a retired judge, who works for the arbitration company. Mm-hmm. You've got the parties not sitting in the same room. I mean, it depends. This was a family matter, so yeah, they were definitely in separate. We were definitely in separate rooms because
that was a lot.
Again, I wasn't directly involved. I was there. I was there in my usual support role.
It's true. You are an excellent emotional pocket priest.
Why, thank you. And the idea is to negotiate a settlement of some sort. Now, that means this isn't going to go through your typical class action lawsuit. There aren't going to be public hearings. This is all behind closed doors.
Certainly.
So what will likely happen through this, based on my understanding, and again, reach out and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're still able to represent the class, mm-hmm. but it's going to be negotiated in such a way
that we won't find out what happens.
And maybe there will be a settlement, like suddenly you'll get one of those emails or something in the mail. It's like, hey, you are part of this class. And they find that because of all the registrations. Anybody who bought a Switch.
Curse you, Eula!
Yes. So that's the power of the end user licensing agreement, right?
Read them. Don't not read them. Yes. Always read them.
In fact, Suzanne Jacko, right? I think it was a PAX South talk about funny things that lawyers have slipped into end user license agreements because people don't read them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, nothing malicious, but just funny stuff because...
Yeah, the little Easter eggs that you find in your end user license agreements. Yep.
And those were quick hits.
And now it's time for a listener question.
Yes. All right. So, Charles Hartford in our Discord server said this. Coming out of E3, it seems like the biggest complaint many still have about Xbox's lineup is that they lack AAA titles on par with The Last of Us or God of War. Games like Halo and Starfield are big, but not expected to hit the same highs as Sony's first-party jewels. But does that really matter? There'll be a group of online fanboys who will scream about Xbox being second-rate to Sony, but by and large, do you think the game community will care? Or, given the far lower cost to enter thanks to Game Pass, the vast majority of gamers will be happy as long as the games look good, play great, and are fun. Even if they're landing in the 8 to 9 range as opposed to the 9.5 to 10s, Sony's best are generally expected to garner. So I want to kind of strip some of the, not that Charles said this, but I want to strip some of the fanboy stuff away from this, right? Yeah,
because actually even more than that, we're going to strip the consumer stuff away from this entirely, because if we're looking at this from a business perspective, you and I have already had this conversation a number of times.
Absolutely. So there are a couple things. We have talked about how Sony's strengths are in single-player linear narrative games mm-hmm. that maybe have some multiplayer elements to them, but largely they're about linear narratives. If you talk about Spider-Man, you talk about The Last of Us, you talk about Ratchet and Clank. Even if you want to, you know, cast a wider net, Ghost of Tsushima, which now does have a fantastic multiplayer mode.
It's fun.
Days Gone, which I know that our friend Gil just finished playing mm-hmm. and said was actually pretty good, even though it had those problematic moments. But if you look, by and large, at what Sony does, it is high-production, blockbuster, single-player, linear narrative. They tell it's God of War, Horizon, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They tell Spider-Man. Very good stories, very gorgeous games. Not that Microsoft's aren't. Microsoft's strengths are with service games. Look at
multiplayer games, more specifically.
Multiplayer games. What was the most beautiful game you saw during the E3 week?
Forza.
Exactly. That game, you want to talk about photorealism? We were watching that thing. It's like, man,
it's unbelievable.
Beautiful reference, and then you realize, oh shit, this is the game.
This is the game! I don't think the clip exists anymore, but I was like pulling at my hair. I was like, I cannot believe this game exists. Like, it's just unbelievably gorgeous. But Forza Horizon as an IP, as a franchise, is service-based.
Yep. So Forza, Halo, Gears.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got all of the studios that they purchased. Now, certainly. Here's the thing. I think that this framing is going to change.
I agree.
And this is when we talk about the years-long plan that Microsoft has had in place. When Hellblade 2 comes out, Psychonauts 2, I think, is also going to stand up against Ratchet and Clank.
I agree. That game, what I saw of it in 2019, it is everything the original Psychonauts was, and then some.
Mm-hmm. And I think that as more of the studios that Microsoft has purchased, I wouldn't discount Starfield, because I think that if you look at how angry, again, this is the one place you can judge, you know, demand. If you look at how upset some of the Sony players, the Sony fanboys are about Starfield being exclusive.
But it's not the other way around.
No, it's not. And I think that you would never turn around. Like, when Insomniac was purchased by Sony, I don't recall a lot of Xbox players being like, oh, that means we're never going to get whatever. It's like, okay, well, this makes a lot of sense. I think there's this weird dynamic that exists. Mm-hmm. So it's very strange. So I wouldn't discount Halo Infinite.
Oh, certainly not.
And I certainly wouldn't discount Starfield. I think the Bethesda acquisition long-term is going to be enormous. And again, yeah, those are single player games. And if you look at a lot of the studios that Microsoft purchased, not all of them, but a lot of them, those are studios that excel at making narrative linear single player games in the places where they haven't really excelled.
Yep. Absolutely agree. I think that Sony's strengths are Sony's strengths, and that they will continue to remain so, but you don't see the flip side. You don't see people looking at Sony and being like, well, I don't have enough multiplayer games. I don't have enough service-based games. I don't have enough to do with my friends on this console. It's different values. They're different cultures. They're philosophical differences.
Yep.
And quite frankly, considering the breadth of this industry, all of the different platforms that you can play games on, it doesn't matter. You can pick and choose the platforms based on the games that you personally want to play. Let people like things.
Mm-hmm.
Let people like different things. Let companies do different things. And then we'll see.
But to the second half of your question, Charles, you asked about Game Pass playing a role. I think Game Pass does change.
It does. It changes how we look at games.
Because, first of all, I don't... What is the difference between an 8 to 9 and a 9.5 to 10?
Almost nothing.
Very little. Right?
Almost nothing.
Again, at the end of the day, it's like, did I have a good time with this game? Did I love this game? Would I play this game again? Am I glad I invested my time?
Because as we have talked about many times on this podcast, privately and online, companies value time played and overall engagement just as much as they value the dollars that they make from game sales.
So I'm going to flip your question on its head just a little bit. Why do scores matter as much, or do scores matter as much? And my answer is no. When you've got a program like Game Pass that says all of our exclusives are going to be available, enjoy. It might be like, hey, you know what? It's getting middling scores, 7-8. I'm going to try this game. Oh, exactly. I love it. Oh, yeah. I'm really glad. I might not have purchased it otherwise. So the number has less value in a Game Pass world.
It does. And if you are, and on the flip side, when it comes to 70 or in some countries' cases, $80, $90 games, you know, those scores to a lot of people are informing those consumer decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the importance to many consumers that can only buy like one or two of these big blockbuster AAA single player titles. So I get that. I really do understand like the value there for the consumer perspective. So like, I get it. And at the same time, moving into a world that has better access at a lower bar for many players is the future that I want.
Yep.
I want more people to play games. I want more people to be able to afford to play games and not just be like, well, I spent all this money on my console and I can only play one of these games every 6 months.
Yep.
That's a lot to hinge on a single title. That's a lot to hinge on a single studio.
And I think if we really want to talk about the difference here before we move on to the last couple stories, Returnal is a good example. Mm-hmm. Like, Returnal launched at a $70 game. It was a game that I had some interest in. I like Housemarque's work.
Yeah, Housemarque does weird games. I like Housemarque's weird games.
And I got to play it when we were visiting friends in Maryland, and I thought it was really great. And it's like, okay, I'm going to pick this game up. I'm still not paying $70 for it. It's a game that on day one I would have tried if it were on a subscription service.
Mm-hmm.
It's a game that I purchased when it was on sale recently.
Yeah.
I paid $30 less than sticker for it.
Sure.
It was that on sale for 50, and I had a $10 Prime Day coupon, so I spent you know, I used it on that. So I spent 40 on it, which to me felt like the price that I was willing to pay for that game. Now, if it were an Xbox game, would Microsoft be happy to know that I'm not going to buy Halo Infinite, that I wouldn't buy Gears 5, that I wouldn't buy Forza Horizon 5, but I will play those games on its, on the service I pay a subscription for? Yeah. If, does Sony value that? No, we know they don't. We know that they're not interested in releasing on PC in a rapid fashion or subscribing. It's just a difference in philosophies.
Philosophical differences. That is what this is going to continue to come down to. And of course, the reason why we are not discussing Nintendo in all of this is because Nintendo is going to do what Nintendo is going to do, and they are going to continue to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do.
Yeah.
The only real failure... The biggest failure that they have had in recent years was the Wii U.
Yep.
And it is way, way back there now.
It
way
is. Way back there. Nobody really, the only reason people think about the Wii U right now is about the few games left that are not, that have made their way to Switch.
Yep.
And Nintendo has been really smart about bringing a lot of those games over.
Absolutely.
So I guess the other thing to point out is that the fanboyism doesn't really track with people who work in the industry.
It really doesn't. For all of the bluster that these that this tribalism has, it doesn't have any real effect on the games being made. It doesn't mm-hmm. have any effect on the studios that are making them, other than, you know, just to bum them out
yep.
from time to time. So ultimately, none of this really matters. The studios are going to do what is financially responsible. Platforms are going to do what's financially responsible and in line with their internal philosophies.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of Microsoft, though, because yeah. that was part of that conversation, they've announced some details about Windows 11.
So this update will be free for anyone who owns Windows 10. This is huge for Microsoft. They I believe they did this with Windows 10 as well.
Yes.
So this is really big. Mm-hmm. I love this. I think that this is, again, I keep talking about this. Satya Nadella is mm-hmm. a literal genius.
Now, the tricky part is there is a little applet that you can download that will tell you if your PC is compatible, because they are only available on certain processors. Or Windows 11 is only going to run on certain processors.
Oh, that's really
strange.
Gen
8 and beyond.
Okay, well,
so I think you're okay. And obviously, James and I are okay because we just got our...
Right. I think the only one that might not be okay is our littlest.
Both. I don't think Gabe's... I don't think my...
Our two littlest?
Yeah, our two littlest. They're older computers, but they're fine.
They're Whatever. Fine. They don't need the latest
But there are some interesting system. Things that popped out around about gaming with yes, regard to Windows 11.
Absolutely. So there, as we previously discussed, there will be a new storefront. Developers will not be required to use Microsoft's in-app payment, and Microsoft will not take a cut unless...
Your app is a game. So remember, we previously talked about how they were reducing their revenue share on PC from 30 to 12 to match Epic.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 70-30, just yep. like Steam, just like their console storefronts across
the
board.
Which is not changing. The console storefront, from right. what we understand, is not changing.
Yes.
And based on the Epic versus Apple, which included Microsoft along the line, we know that that
30% On Epic's side of things.
We know that that 30%, Microsoft considers that a necessity for research and development for the next, for whatever comes next from Xbox.
Right, on the console
side.
On the PC side, they've acknowledged, hey, maybe we don't need to take so much. They reduced it to the 88-12, which is what Epic is. So,
absolutely.
So they only take 12%.
And they will be starting that on August 1st.
Mm-hmm, which was previously announced. Now, here are some interesting things about Windows 11 and the way it will integrate with gaming.
Yes, because Game Pass is going to be built right into the operating
yeah,
system.
Yeah, so cool.
I think that's great. Instead of having to download an extra app,
mm-hmm.
it's just right there.
Yep.
Which is fantastic. Cloud streaming will also be included, which means that you can stream your Xbox games to your PC with Xbox Series X quality now that the servers have been updated.
Yeah, that we had talked about right before E3, the E3 summer game mess, that... They were planning on updating their servers so
that's
they were
right.
going to be able to serve out better quality. That's now completed, so that's mm-hmm. fantastic. Windows 11 is also going to feature direct storage, which is their Velocity architecture, so
yep.
that they use on the Xbox Series X and extra small, and auto HDR.
Ooh.
So they've taken those learnings and that technology that they worked on for the consoles.
And again, they're bringing everything together,
yep.
which I think is really interesting. And that, again, speaks to how important gaming is to Windows,
mm-hmm.
to Microsoft, rather. For Windows, and they consider Windows to be an extension of the Xbox ecosystem.
Yep. Now, Phil, I think last year said, hey, look, I understand the skepticism about Microsoft saying we're all in on gaming. We've said it before on PC. We've said it before. let us prove it to you. And I right. think they're walking the walk at this point.
Because Games for Windows, if you will recall that debacle. Games for Windows was a disaster.
It was a mess.
It was an absolute disaster.
Well, and it's still a ripple effect of disaster because now that they sunset it, there are games that used it, which, of course, now that it hampers the...
I have a number of games for Games for Windows, and
If they work, they don't work well.
Exactly. It is just... It's a mess. The whole architecture was a mess.
Yep.
So... People that remember Games for Windows and what an absolute disaster that was, I can understand why they would be like, all right, look, you've done this before. We trusted you once. What are you going to do this time?
Yeah, well, and look, I'm not going to say that the Xbox store, the game store on PC is good right now.
Oh, no, it is absolutely not.
It's a nightmare.
It's totally...
Like, you can't access the folders and... Like, stuff breaks. All the problems we had playing Master Chief Collection.
Yeah. It was really, 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 really difficult. And I don't really have an old computer by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't my computer's fault.
Yeah.
This is certainly a result of them still trying to work out the kinks.
Yep. So I'm hopeful that Windows 11 actually takes all those learnings and fixes some of the core problems with gaming through the Windows Store right now. I still love Game Pass, still love using Game Pass on PC. It's just,
yeah,
can be a challenge.
It can be absolutely a challenge. So that's really cool about Windows 11. I really hope that they release their presentations so that folks that are blind or hard of hearing will be able to better access that content. Because mm-hmm. from what I understand, that was lacking in the presentation.
That's unfortunate. They're usually pretty good about that.
All right, on to our last story. Oh boy. Mike, what if I told you that we could go to PAX this year?
I would say you're a dirty liar.
But I'm not. I'm not, because PAX West will be the first live event in the United States as we start to come out of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, so, okay. So the event's going to be held in person in Seattle at the Seattle Convention Center, just like it usually is, right?
Mm-hmm. The Washington State Convention Center,
the WSCC, and I'm sure some of the surrounding hotels, as usual.
I would imagine.
It's going to have reduced capacity and safety protocols. It will take place from September 3rd to September 6th, so that is leading right up to Labor Day like it usually is.
It's just a lot later. Like, our kids are going
to be... Our kids go back to school before Labor Day, so it's already tough for us. But then we looked... Now, when they first announced it, they said, all right, safety protocols are going to be coming. Tickets are going on sale in the next couple of weeks. Oh, by the way, like, this is very late. West tickets usually go on sale in the March, April?
Usually in February, March, because they go so fast. And because people from all over the world... Because remember, this is the original PAX.
Yeah, this is PAX Prime.
This was PAX Prime for a really long time. It's now known as PAX West, but it wasn't known as that back in the day. Back when it was just PAX in Seattle, this was the event.
Yes.
I went, my first PAX was in Seattle in 2008. I have missed three PAX Wests / Primes in the many years that I've been attending.
Yeah, I've been to... Every PAX PAX West that's been held since 2013.
Yeah.
So this would have been 8 in a row, but you know, here are some of the issues. They did release the safety protocols.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, I think a lot of these make a lot of sense. You will need to wear a mask.
Good.
You will need to maintain social distancing.
Not sure how that's going to be possible considering the Washington State Convention Center and how packed it usually is.
And they are going to have reduced capacity, but can you imagine being an enforcer being like, you need to step up? Think about panel queues.
Oh, I can't.
And think about how close everybody is in those panel queues.
Those panel queues are always like, but okay, so on the flip side of that, those panel queues back before I was in the industry... I met lots of really interesting people. And like back when Street Pass was the thing that we did on
PAX was Street Pass heaven.
It was. And playing, you know, line games with a bunch of strangers. And, you know, like, this is the thing about PAX West that I love so much. It always feels like you're coming home. It's not going to feel like you're coming home this year. Because it's just, how could you feel safe?
Yep.
Because here's the problem.
Yeah, you need to get your temperature checked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
important. Not a problem.
You won't be able to shake hands. Like, you're not allowed, like, I don't know how they're going to monitor this, like, but hugs and handshakes, it'll be like, waves. I mean, that's fine, and that's what you should do.
I mean, yeah, elbow bumps.
But not even touching. Like, they don't want you touching. No touches.
No touchy. Here's the big problem.
Yeah, here's the big problem.
You won't have to prove that you've been vaccinated.
That's a deal breaker for me. Like,
that was the biggest deal breaker for me. Listen, I come from a country that very rigorously tracks children's vaccinations. I have vaccination records in my parents' house, I think, dating all the way back from, you know, the late 80s to the 90s and through me finishing high school in the mid-aughts, right? Like, this, it's just something you do. It's just something you have. And if you have been vaccinated for something, you can go back in your medical records and you can prove it.
Yeah.
And for the children, before we moved here, they actually had vaccination passports that we brought with them to every vaccination that we got for them. And it was a great way for us to keep track of, you know, where are they at with their immunization records.
Yes.
And it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like, okay, well, you're, you know, this is like government overreach. Well, no, the children need to be fully vaccinated in order to go to public schools. That's the way it is in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at this. So also, first of all, in the United States, like, if you go to public school, you need to prove vaccinations. Like, this,
yeah,
it's, I think, not this new. Is where the CDC dropped the ball. I think it is because of right-wing stupidity, where it's like, oh, I don't want a vaccination passport. And then you had all the people who were comparing it to, like, the Holocaust and wearing stars, which, by the way, and I never swear on this show, and I'm not going to do it now, fudge you. As a Jew, fudge you. If that is the analogy that you're making, oh, I have to prove my vaccination, I'm going to wear a yellow Star of David. It's like, nope, fudge you right in the ear.
Yep.
Fudge you hard.
Yep. No, that's a fair thing. So the biggest questions that Mike and I have coming out of this is, which exhibitors are going to risk this? You are not going to see any of the big AAA companies there, period. Because most of the companies have already said that they are not allowing any travel or in-person events until 2022.
Yep. And then, you know, which attendees are going to go. And I think that, I don't know how Reed Pop sells PAX West without an exhibitor list.
I don't know, because I don't know, unless you're local. Unless you're local and you know what the climate is going to be in terms of, you know, the vaccinations or whatever, I would be really nervous. And I mean, any way you slice it, I would be nervous. Yep. And quite frankly, so much of the world hasn't been vaccinated because of everything that has been happening in the United States that did actively prevent the United States from shipping vaccinations to other countries.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, this is this is deeply privileged. This is deeply privileged because there are many parts of the world that cannot open up yet. I can't even get home. You know, so even if you and I went and, like, my folks were vaccinated, they wouldn't be allowed to come across the border.
Yep.
They wouldn't be allowed to come to Seattle, which is, like, not that far away for them. My brother either. Because the border's closed.
So my feeling here is that Reed Pop is preparing for a situation in which they are legally allowed to have this event, and therefore their insurance wouldn't cover a cancellation.
I'm sure that this has got to be that, because Reed Pop's a lot of things, but they're not stupid. And they're not stupid about their in-person events specifically.
Yeah. I guess generally my feeling here is that this is, okay, if we have to have the event, we need to try to make as much money as we can to recover from what we are sure is going to be a loss.
Yeah.
And maybe it won't be. Maybe they'll make enough of their money back. But honestly, I don't know. I think those show floors are going to be relatively empty in terms of exhibitors. Anybody who's international is not coming.
Nope.
Anybody who is a large company is not going to be there.
Nope.
So I wouldn't expect a Capcom to be there. I wouldn't expect a Sega to be there.
I wouldn't expect Xbox to be there.
Nope. And they're right in town. I don't expect Nintendo to be there. And they're right in town also.
Nope. Most of the biggest companies have a travel freeze and an in-person event freeze until next year.
Because they don't want the liability of telling an employee, you have to go to this event, and then they get sick.
And then they get sick. Absolutely. Or if we're, I mean, like, not to be all cuddly and touchy-feely about this, It's protecting their employees, yep, first and foremost, and ensuring that people are not going to be put in harm's way unnecessarily.
Yeah. So, I do feel for Reed Pop here in that they're in this terrible situation.
It's an awful situation.
But come on, require people to have their vaccination cards with them.
Or even just photos.
Yeah.
Or like a photocopy.
Yep.
Or something.
Yep.
Like,
I feel for the enforcers, like anybody who's there as an enforcer. Not only that, they're going to have to enforce like direction, like the rows are going to be like walking in the supermarket during the pandemic, right? You're only supposed to go one way. And look at how well those supermarkets enforce that, even here in the Northeast.
Yeah.
They did not.
Which was an epicenter of the pandemic, quite frankly.
And imagine people coming from the South where people were more resistant to wearing masks. I mean, it's not like we didn't have any stupid people up here.
Oh, God, no.
But not as bad as in
Well, it was also mandated here. It was, like, mandated by the governor.
Yep. But having in the places where they did not take this seriously, and you had a population...
The government did not take it seriously, and therefore, you know, pockets of the population didn't either. It's not to paint everyone with the same broad strokes.
Yes, but there are a lot of dumb people, is what I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I'm not,
a lot I'm, of stupid people playing I stupid games win and stupid winning prizes. PAX POX prizes.
All right. Well, I don't want to be catching PAX POX on the best of PAXes. So the big problem that we've identified is that the major exhibitors that are almost always at PAX are not likely to be there. Yep. I can't see a scenario where they would risk their employees or they would risk any of this. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be worth it. The return on investment this year is not going to be worth it. Yes. And the second question that we have is, are we ready? Are we ready to go back to in-person events at this particular scale? Are we ready?
I don't think so. And my concern is this. We know that a lot of the if you look at the hospitalizations and the infections, it's overwhelmingly people who are not vaccinated. But that doesn't mean you can't get sick. That doesn't mean you can't get it. It just means your case is going to be mild. And we don't know, even with those mild cases, the long-term implications. I don't think I'm emotionally ready for this.
I know I'm not emotionally ready for this. It was hard enough even just going into New York, the handful of times that I've been in since I've been vaccinated, you know, where it's either been dead, where I'm like, where is everyone on Fifth Avenue? Like, Fifth Avenue is usually packed. And going from that to everything was packed, and it was like when I was out in Brooklyn. So, I mean, it was a lot. It was a lot for me to deal with, even though I knew I was vaccinated and I was still wearing a mask. But the thing that I worry most about are people like my parents that are immunocompromised, that heard it. They do, even though they are going to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated, I believe. My mother is fully vaccinated now. I don't know about my dad, but this is about protecting people that actually are not physically able to get the vaccination, and protecting the elderly, protecting people that are immunocompromised, that the Delta variant could make them sick. You know, it's not just about you, and it's not just about me. It's about our communities. It's about the people that need to be protected. It isn't just about, and this is the thing that, and this is coming from a Canadian, right? I don't understand the individualistic mindset. I'm never going to understand it. What I care most about is not just keeping our family safe, but keeping other people's families safe.
Yep, absolutely. And that is a great place for us to wrap up the show. Thank you for listening to episode 91 of the Virtual Economy Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Virtual Econcast. I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
And I'm at Amanda Farrow. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. You can also listen to us on all major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and, oh man,
Pocket Sand.
Oh man, every time. I need to make that into a sticker. You know what? If you enjoyed this show as much as we often enjoy recording it, we'd love it if you could subscribe and, if possible, let us know what you think.
Yes. And the way you can let us know that what you think, in addition to leaving those glowing reviews that we so richly deserve.
And are so grateful for.
You can DM us with questions at Virtual EconCast. You can shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz. You can also join our Discord. Please DM us at our individual Twitter accounts or the Virtual Economy Twitter account. We'd be glad to give you an invite to the Discord. Yeah, those are some ways. We have Signal. If you have some super secret information that you want to chat with us about that you think would be good for a report, we still do original reporting from time to time.
We do.
Yeah.
From time to time when we have, in fact, time.
Yes.
So you can also further support the show. And remember, this isn't necessary. You don't have to do this. And we're always going to keep this show right here that you are listening to. This show is always going to be free. It's yours. Yes. We want to give this to you. This is important to continue to make the business of games accessible for everybody that wants to better understand how this industry works. So you don't have to worry about this show, you know, being a paid show.
Yeah, we're never going to paywall this show.
But if you want to support us further, you can find us on Ko-fi, Ko-fi, whatever the heck you want to call it. It's ko-fi.com/virtual economy. And you know what? Starting in the fall, I think we're going to have like some exclusive content on there where we might post some more writing. We might host some community Q&As. We might do some exclusive interviews potentially. So we'll see. But this show right here is always going to be yours.
Absolutely. We will not be back next week. Nope. We are actually taking a vacation with the fam. We're going.
We deserve it. We've earned it. Gosh darn it.
Gosh, I wish we could talk about some of the work we've been doing this month. It has been a lot, but it's we're under NDA after NDA after NDA.
It's been very exciting.
It has been very exciting. We are going to be masked when we're, you know, if we happen to be indoors with other people. We will be on the beach away from other people.
But we're going to be chasing our children and building sand castles and swimming in the ocean. And Mike will be
reading a book and sleeping on the beach. If I die and go to heaven and it's just reading a book and sleeping on a beach, that's okay.
Cool.
That's okay.
I love that for you.
So we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Yep. Absolutely. And if you need to get in touch with us, you can find us at all of the places that we have mentioned.
Actually, now that I think about it, we will be back in 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Well, I mean, think about it. When are we coming back?
Oh, true. Yeah, we're actually going to be back in 3 weeks. Don't miss us too much.
But do drop stuff into the Discord if you have big stories.
Or if you have big questions.
Big questions. You know, thank you to Charles for sending in that question. It was a good conversation. I'm glad we were able to talk about it. So we'll see you in a few weeks, folks. Take care of yourselves. Be good. Drink some water. Stay hydrated. Wash your hands. You know, don't get Paxpox. Yeah.
We'll see you soon.